It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host, and I am joined today by Mary Perry, a local author and activist and communications consultant. And I have this long resume for you. If I give you all of it, listeners, then we'll just say, and thank you for joining us, and that'll be it. But thank you for joining us, Mary.
Sure. Happy to be here.
I am talking with you today because we have a mutual friend, Miss Penny Rich, a great friend of the show. I'm thinking of creating a monogrammed towel to give her for when she's on the Weekend Water Cooler, because she's here so much. And it would just say, you know, PR. I think Penny Rich has the best name until I met Mary Perry. That's so cute. And this is your married name?
Correct. Yeah, so my mom wasn't that mean.
Or clever. I mean, look, so Mary is the author of this wonderful book, Sadie McGrady Runs for President, with a picture of this beautiful young girl on the cover. And I'm going to take a wild guess, having looked at the jacket of the book, this could be your daughter.
I think a lot of people think that, but my daughter inspired the book.
Okay.
But by the time the book came around, at the time to take the photograph, she was too old. The target demographic.
So you didn't use a younger picture of her or something. Yes. Well, she's a lovely. She is the perfect face for your book. How old is she, by the way? I'm going to say 10, 12.
I think she's right a little older than she looks in the photo, but the target age was 8 to 10.
You know, kids are great that way. You know, they can look younger when they want to. Like, oh, I didn't break that. What? I don't know what happened. No.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, so Sadie McGrady Runs for President. Tell us about the book and how you got the idea for the book.
Sure. The idea came about in 2012. I was doing some organizing with President Obama's campaign.
Okay.
And my kids came along with me to the field office.
Okay.
We were there quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
My boys made phone calls and registered voters. My daughter really took to it and wanted to go all the time.
Uh-huh.
And one day she asked me, Mom, who can run for president? It sort of hit her in the middle of the hustle of the office.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is really great. I love it. Who can do that?
Who gets to do this, right? Yeah, yeah.
And it just occurred to me that I really hadn't put this in front of her other than this experience, right?
Right.
It was really important to me to kind of feed that desire of hers to stay engaged with campaigns and maybe even think about running for office herself.
Right.
So I went to good old Google and started looking for books I could get her, and there really wasn't.
And you said, Google, show me all the inspirational books for young girls about running for president. And Google said, what?
Google said, might want to write that. There's a dearth.
You know what? That would be a great response from a search engine. I can't find that book. You might want to write that.
Right.
You should send that to Google.
Terrific, yeah.
Google, if you're listening.
That's how it came about.
They are always listening, by the way.
Oh.
It's so true. Oh, my God. Oh, I didn't mean some of those things I said, Google. So did your daughter help you write this book?
So I wrote it, and she inspired it, but she definitely was an intricate part of the process of mm-hmm. developing the book.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me a lot of feedback on it, and then she and her friend Bryn were kind of production designers with the photographer and I during the photography sessions.
Oh my goodness.
They had they did hair and dressed them and kind of brought their kid perspective on what a candidate would look like if you were this age and pretending
because
to
you need to know this for relatability,
office,
right?
Right? Yeah. Absolutely.
You were like, no, this is what a kid would like, and then you look at your daughter and she went, oh mom.
Right. And I have to say, the photographer, Corey Williams of
yes.
Glee and Bliss Photography, she brought a serious creativity and fun to the whole project.
Yeah. I mean, the pictures are absolutely wonderful. It's very whimsical and musical. I think that the sound of it is musical. I think the sound of the name is musical, like your own name. So you can say what you want about your name, but I think it's adorable. People think you're adorable, right?
That's great.
So if my married name was like McLean or something, it would be like that.
Right.
Jean McLean, and everybody would go, oh, that's so cute. And after about 5 minutes, I'd go, yeah, stop it.
He doesn't bother me at all, but I just remember back when you used to have to call for airline tickets and, you know, make reservations or order a pizza, and I would get the occasional snarky 20-year-old making fun of my rhyming name.
Is that your real name?
Just a name, y'all.
Right, exactly. Yeah, really, don't get all shook up about it. It's, you know, I can always change it, by
the way.
It works
great on a children's book, right?
It does. It really does. So I love that, and then your publisher is Inkshares, and I don't know very much about Inkshares. Tell me about them and how they work.
So Inkshares is based in California, but one of their founders was a Chapel Hillian, Thad Woodman, and I discovered the book at a different event. Shortly before, I was trying to figure out how to navigate this book. Would this book, this manuscript that I've written, would it really turn into a book? Or would I say, oh, I wish I had done that? And I had sort of 2016 as my goal of, you know, this is when I want to get this done. I want to get this done before 2016 election. So I just happened to see another book. I think I was in Flyleaf and saw another book that was published by a local author. And I looked it up, not knowing that it had more of a crowdfunding model, which was really fun to
That's very cool.
With my development and communications background, I thought, crowdfunding, no problem.
No problem. So, I'll just run that up the flagpole.
And it was fun because it was kind of Sadie's campaign, right, to see if she could get published.
It's a wonderful test of your product. You know, crowdfunding. And you know, if you can't get that done, then maybe you ought to rethink the project or, you know, go back and talk to your personal focus group, your kids. And say, where did we go wrong? Where did you go wrong?
We like this.
Where was your criticism wrong, kids? No pressure. Well, I do have a complaint about Sadie McGrady's platform. And I considered taking this up with Michelle Obama, but I decided not to. Part of her platform is no more veggies. You know, look, please explain yourself.
Hey,
you had to negotiate. The kids made you do that, right?
They totally did. We thought this needs to be something that the kids might actually write on their sign. This whole book is sort of the Sadie's experience playing pretend what it would be like to run for president and lead. So we thought we were imagining the kids sitting around, you know, drawing up their posters. What would their campaign posters look like? And this was, I think, Emma had a lot of
And it was like, these are bills that Sadie wants to pass. And it says, no more veggies, guinea pig rights, which I love. She's a guinea pig activist.
Absolutely.
So that's excellent. Later bedtimes, who doesn't want that? You always be sorry in the morning, though, kids. You got to think about that.
It's
your body needs what it needs. And then extra recess time, which, frankly, I'm not sure that's really a kid thing. I mean, you know, isn't that paid family leave? Isn't that what that really is? You got to think about these issues.
There are subtle things in here you might want to watch
for. I think that Americans, by and large, just work too many hours. I don't think it's necessarily a great thing to tell people, I work 60 hours a week. Really? You do that? I mean, for some jobs, I guess it's almost inescapable to do that. If you're going to be an attorney, let's say on the, you know, a prosecutor for Robert Mueller or something, I mean, I think these people are working 80 and 100 hours a week, but it's for a short time, and nobody thinks that's a healthy thing to do for them. But I'm glad that they're doing that for the country. I don't think that they're getting really enough credit necessarily for that. I'm sure I couldn't name one of them, which might be a good thing for them. That Mueller is just sort of the lightning rod person. But I think that we work too many hours. I think kids are right about that. We should listen to kids.
We should.
And you know, in our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about some of these issues that, you know, around kids and leadership. And I think part of what your book does is it says, you know, I think, by the way, in a subtle way, I hope this is what you meant to say. It's like, well, you know, girls should hear this message that girls can be leaders too. But for me, the larger message is kids can be leaders too, and kids can be out in front about a lot of things, and we probably should really listen to them a little more. Because they have an important perspective on leadership that is hard for adults to have, in that they have a sort of unspoiled version of what the world looks like to them, and they're not reluctant about calling it what it is, even if it's bologna. You know, if it's a bologna sandwich, they're going to say, yeah, this is not steak. This is a bologna sandwich.
So true. I mean,
you know, some people like bologna. You know, I'll tell you a funny story about my mother and bologna sandwiches. When we come back, we're going to talk some more with Mary Perry about her wonderful book and about girls being leaders and about the No More Veggie platform. I mean, maybe she just already eats a lot of veggies and she just says, oh, I can't take any more.
Yeah, we're going to have to really
investigate. We're going to have to sort that out. We might need a special prosecutor for this. I don't know. Special counsel. I don't know. Anyway, we're talking with Mary Perry, and you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back, and you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler, and we're talking today with Mary Perry. And Mary Perry with the most wonderful name. So I wanted to ask you about girls in leadership, but specifically about organizing kids. And, you know, I think that we all have been through a transformative experience after Parkland and seen that the kids from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida have taken us all to a completely different understanding about what it means to get organized and advocate. And we are now on the brink of enormous changes. I mean, there already have been changes. There have been changes in Florida law that happened as a result of the advocacy of those kids. That's a difficult needle to move, I think it's fair to say.
Sure.
And so that was like a small miracle, and I think showed everybody that these kids were, like, really serious. And watching all of the national media interviews that they did immediately after that terrible event, to me, was indicative of the fact that it wasn't just that this terrible thing happened at their school. It's that they're the kids that were on television a lot. They regrettably have been prepared for this event over years and years, and they were able to, very much to their credit and the credit of their parents and their teachers, they were extremely able to communicate that they've grown up in a generation where schools are a place where shootings happen. This is something that happens in America. And now let's turn to the sports page. It's become a routine, terrible, but it's an event that, in terms of how we consume news, is ordinary. It happens regularly. That should not be true, of course. But you know, in the news business, we cover all kinds of things, you know, bank robberies, a building burned down, somebody got killed this way, somebody got killed that way, a car accident. And this is now into that kind of category. It's like, it's terrible. We all agree it's terrible, but it's become a ridiculous cliche. And now these kids have done organizing that has thrown a bucket of cold water on the whole country. I mean, except a couple of people in power. It would seem. So you've been involved in organizing kids locally and just supporting their organization more accurately. Tell me about how you have found that experience to be.
I think...
And as we're recording today, we're recording on the 15th, and there's an event today, right?
Right. There's a global climate strike that's similar to the walkouts that happened last year, where kids are saying, you know, we don't have a vote, but we can create some media attention and hopefully make you pay attention to what we have to say.
Right.
And I think it's so important that we listen to what they have to say.
And is this happening in Chapel Hill Carborough schools? Or is it statewide? Or
so I've seen articles about it. I haven't heard of any organization like happened with the the walkout about guns last year.
Right, right.
I think part what I would like to see is the students who are organizing and coming out and saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to walk out of school because we're really upset. We want this to stop.
Right.
I feel like they did such a great job here locally with that last year. They kind of all worked together and they, you know, made T-shirts and they kind of, you know, organized themselves and made themselves aware. I think what could happen, the more that these things happen, we've got to help these kids support their efforts, support their advocacy in that way, but then pull them into how do we keep moving the ball till we get the change that we want.
Right.
It does create media attention, and the legislators do pay attention to that.
Yes,
and it does
do.
Wake up parents.
Right.
With the walkout on the topic of guns, I think it taught parents who thought they knew what was going on.
Right.
And they were hearing straight from my daughter's picture on social media. She held up a sign. I didn't see it until it was on her social media. And it said, I don't want to die here.
Yeah, right.
And that punched
exactly.
me in the gut.
Yeah, I believe it, Mary.
Talking
I
to the kids
it.
About they have strategies for their exit strategy in every class. They develop this just like it's normal. It's a habit of theirs
right.
because it's such a part of their
like
life.
Like a fire drill.
Right. So I think it didn't just organize them. It woke up parents to how serious this was and how it was impacting their kids on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So
And I think that with events like that, it helps you to resensitize yourself, not realizing necessarily that you've been desensitized
right.
To the idea that when your kids leave in the morning, and if they leave and they're starting to say, okay, I'm going out for the bus, love you, Mom, that they mean something more than that.
Right.
They're thinking, today could be the day, so I better, you know, and that this is on their minds. I'm not saying it isn't a good thing to say I love you to your mom on the
right.
way out the door. And it's not always a big, heavy thing. But
there's more there.
But there can be a great deal more there. And man, that's stress for kids. This is not how we want kids' lives to be anywhere in the world. It's
no.
not just an American thing. But this particular phenomenon feels like an American epidemic of gun violence. And, you know, we talked a little bit during the break. I'm struggling with the idea of how young is too young for kids to become involved as activists in this movement. I feel uncomfortable when I see a young kid who's 9 years old at a gun rights rally. That makes me very uncomfortable. And it's like, you know, don't take my rights away and whatever. And yet, you know, I'm sure their parents have, you know, I hope their parents have thought about what they're doing and they're trying to teach their children to stand up for themselves and their rights. I worry about that. And by the same token, the kids at Newtown were murdered at school. And it was insufficient to shock the nation into action. And I feel like we need a way to get kids to the table to talk about this, because I think they're probably talking about it anyway. I feel like that's one of the things that the Parkland kids showed us, is that, oh, they've been talking about this.
Right.
Now they're going to have a platform to tell us what they think.
Right.
But they already knew what they thought about it. They've grown up in school with this sword hanging over them
mm-hmm.
all the time. And now we're seeing this spilling out. And I think it did spill out into the 2018 elections. Do you think that guns is going to be a serious issue in the presidential race next year?
I can't imagine that it
Imagine
won't
all those kids turning 18.
Be a factor for a number of different voters. I mean,
hasn't it been until now, right?
Right. I think there have been. I mean, you've got groups organizing for a long time, but I think it's my generation or just adults versus the
yeah.
kids who are growing up like this have been kind of waiting for things
right.
to change and maybe writing a letter, making a call, and but you know, by and large, maybe waiting till the next election to vote again and not
yeah.
really
yeah.
organizing. And these kids are just drawing a line in the sand and they're saying no more. We
yeah.
don't want this anymore. Everyone,
you must articulate a platform that will interrupt this process,
right?
Or we're done with you,
right?
Yeah. In other words, we're going to vote on this issue, in the way that evangelicals vote on abortion as an issue.
Right.
They may have opinions about other things, but this one issue, to their credit, they are so committed on stopping abortion rights
right.
that they will table every other issue that gets in the way, and they will make this a litmus test for every candidate because they want judges on that issue, and they want candidates on that issue mm-hmm. alone.
Yeah, they're single-issue voters a lot.
Yeah, they really are. And, I mean, as an activist, that's you have to admire how they've leveraged their issue to get what they want. I don't agree with their position, but I appreciate the seriousness with which they advocate for their position. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that and about direct action versus, you know, going to the polls, voting, checking the box, and then going home and waiting 2 years to see if it's all fixed. I think we know that's not really going to work. We're talking with Mary Perry, author of Sadie McGrady Runs for President, and we'll be back with more on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we are back with Mary Perry, author of Sadie McGrady Runs for President. Would be spoiling the book to tell everybody whether or not Sadie becomes president? Is she president now? President McGrady?
Her term has expired, so, but she absolutely won. And I don't think that's a spoiler. I think that's fun and a great reason to read the book.
Right. You know, probably we should get another book about her second term.
Right.
About Sadie McGrady gets reelected.
Right.
Because, you know, governance is a thing in our society that's kind of, you know, become a little bit of a dirty word because it involves compromise,
right.
you know, between and among politicians. I think one of the things that's interesting, if we look at it very much on a macro level, about young people especially, and I'm talking about high school kids who can't vote yet, like the kids from Parkland, who are getting involved politically. They're doing this because they want direct action. They can get a million followers
right.
on Twitter. They can say to all of them, call your congressional representatives. And I don't know if you've seen that wonderful report, Indivisible, that started the Indivisible groups.
Yes.
It's a wonderful document. If you haven't seen it, please Google it and find it and download it. It's free. It's a wonderful organizing document that tells you how to do things from a standpoint of political organization on an issue that you care about that you could start doing today that will have an actual impact. And it's written by congressional staffers who are saying, you know, it's great that you send emails, for example, but my congressman that I worked for is not reading those. That's not interrupting his day. Call the office and make the phone ring. Now you have his attention. That's a different level of activity. And tweeting and retweeting, okay, it builds awareness. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to move an elected official on an issue and get them to vote a certain way or pay attention to the fact that you have a group of people who are organizing in a certain way, show up at the district office, call the district office, tell them that you live in that district. These are all things that get you up over the bar of, are they going to pay attention to me? And I think that young people have taken that and just exploded it into a much bigger level of activity, marches, walkouts, which I'm happy to say a lot of schools are supporting because they know that this is also teaching politics and civics. It's teaching people how to be good citizens. Sometimes that means getting up and walking out of school for an hour and getting in front of a news camera and showing your sign and being involved in that way. And so they're kind of recalibrating what it means to be involved. And I don't know about you, I've been thrilled to see all the activity at the General Assembly in the last couple of years.
Sure.
And it feels, you tell me what you think. I feel like the ground is shifting where it comes to the General Assembly.
Absolutely.
Look at what it's taken.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think what you see is we've seen marches and rallies in the past, but we saw that subside for a decade or so.
Right.
And I think we've just had a reawakening of our need to be civically engaged. And if we were all perfect citizens, we would be civically engaged every day, raising our voices. That's, you know, a whole job for some folks. So, I mean, it's really, you can't discount that the parents in the sandwich generation are trying to take care of their parents and raise these kids. And I've also got to change the makeup of my legislature. And I've been already worried about 2020.
And I have to go to the grocery store and get the dry cleaning and go to the pediatrician's
office. The bills.
Yeah,
the dog just threw up. You know, all the things that get in your way. But at the same time, I think folks have realized they've got to reshift their priorities and take care of some of the stuff. So the Indivisible Guide you mentioned did spur several groups in the Triangle area.
Absolutely fantastic.
Sure,
yeah.
Who are out pounding the pavement, knocking on doors. And, you know,
they're doing the good old shoe leather, you know, stuff that.
Yes.
And one of the things is, I think that the Obama campaign actually had data on this, that almost the only thing that's actually going to change a voter's mind is a person speaking to them in person, one to one, and walking through the issues and then kind of hearing them out.
Right.
And saying, okay, but I appreciate that you're concerned about your gun rights, but did you realize that there's been no effort in the Obama administration to take away anybody's guns? This is about making sure that people, not you, people who shouldn't have guns don't get them as a matter of public safety.
Right.
You don't want a deranged person walking up and down the street or in front of your child's elementary school, right?
Right.
And when you walk through those issues and really get them to think all the way through it and justify it, that's about the only thing that actually changes somebody's mind.
Right. They talked a lot about hearts and minds in the Obama campaign, and a lot of super liberal folks like to use data and throw data at you and think that's going to change your mind, and really trying to help people understand where the voters in the middle ground are coming from. They're busy, they're students, or they're single moms. And what we need to do is share a story rather than data and say, I hear that education is your top issue. My daughter is a teacher and she had to leave the state because we're not paying them well enough. So issues like that that make it really drive home to person, like you said.
Right, right. And also the use of micro data, so that when people were going door to door for the Obama campaign, they know what they literally know what the issue is on that street.
Right.
That's a pretty amazing use of data.
Right.
But it's using that those powers for good. You know.
Right. Yeah.
It's not trying to overwhelm somebody by saying, well, everybody else is for this, and you should be too. It's in fact quite the opposite of that.
Right.
It's like, you know, your neighborhood understands because you live near this this water supply, so you understand the need for clean water. You live right here, and the reservoir is right there, and so you must you must think about this all the time.
Right.
When you know the opposite might be true, but they should be thinking about it all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think kids are. It's interesting about. I think that kids are really getting some traction about climate change. And I would really love to see kids put together an assault, so to speak, on legislators as grandchildren talking to grandparents. You know, you can't stick me with this.
Right.
You know, you know, this isn't fair.
Yeah.
You know, you've gone and had a party, and now you're leaving me all this mess to clean up.
Right.
And so, you know, it's only fair that you help me out with this, and let's get some stuff done so that it's so that when my dog licks something up off the floor, I don't have to worry about killing the dog.
Right.
Although, you know, that dog. Oh, that dog. Yeah, kids are great about dropping food on the floor for dogs. You know, what is that anyway? Why do kids do that? Why do adults do that? But I don't know why kids do that. I think that they're fascinated with, you know, oh, I think this tastes like a vegetable. So it's not on the Sadie McCready platform. So off you go. And the dog is like, I can't read. I'll eat it. You're
my
best friend.
That's an easy way to pass the buck. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to have to, you know, I want to remind your daughter that, as we discussed privately, that I want to remind your daughter that French fries are vegetables too. French fries, potato chips. Those little potato sticks, remember mm-hmm. those? I used to eat those all the time. I don't anymore. Why is that?
I
just
know,
grew
no.
out of it, I guess. I don't know.
I think vegetables is a pretty big platform. You might be able to come together on that issue.
That's right. See, I mean, the kids can give a little. You can say, okay, listen, you're going to have some broccoli, okay? We're just going to pour cheese all over it. And then, come on, who doesn't want this? I mean, there are things in food that kids love. There are things that you can slip into a casserole. And, you know, even get a husband to eat if he's not necessarily the biggest fan of, I'm looking at you, Dad, at, you know, green beans, peas, and this, you know, my dad is like, you're going to find all of those collected in one corner of the plate. Very segregated on that topic. Some of those green things, he just, you know, and see, I'm that way with a lima bean. I just never could get along with a lima bean. I don't know why it is, but but if you put it in a casserole and it's surrounded by other things that I love, and you put enough cheese on it, and maybe some breadcrumbs on the top, we should go out to lunch right after this. you know, I'm going to eat that, and I'm just going to say, well, I suppose they're in there, but I'm just not going to pay attention to that.
That's right. There's something for everyone.
That's right. There needs to be an amalgam of flavors that will just take you home, right?
Totally true.
My brother, my older brother is a chef. My younger brother is a person who hates beets like no human being has ever hated beets.
He's passionate about beets.
He has a passion about beets and hating them. And so my older brother made this meal for him when they were both visiting my dad in Florida. And as Chris is like, my younger brother's just like sopping up the last of what's on his plate. And he said, you know, by the way, is there any more of that, you know, vegetable casserole or whatever it was? And Dave says, oh, yeah, here you go, and you know, whatever. And Chris says, you know, what these little particulars in here and whatever, you know, what are those? And he says, well, why don't you, you know, finish eating, and, you know, I'll tell you, I'll look for the recipe. And he's pretending that he's searching around. Well, my younger brother, who hates beets, had just had two servings of something that was primarily beets, and he was shocked. He was shocked.
Did he change his mind on that issue?
I said, you know, I think you should open your mind.
Right.
Open your mind. There could be a whole world of beet stuff out there that you just have been missing
That's
out
right.
on. And you know what he said? Yeah, no. I still hate beets. I don't know how Dave did that. And I said, well, you know what beets are, right? They're sugar. I mean,
right.
Come on. So, see, he just... That just slipped in there on him. Poor Chris. He didn't notice that the beats snuck up on him and made friends with him, and he just has to live with that.
That's right.
He has to live with that now. So we'll be back with more. No more beats, but we'll be back with more on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back with our closing moments with Mary Perry, and she's telling me about, you know, what happens next, and about kids and activism, and I'm just going to sit back and let you tell me everything you just told me, because it's all fantastic stuff.
Sure. Happy to.
Just jump in.
Okay. Well, you know, looking forward, I'm always looking at bringing more people into civic engagement on a regular basis, and as we've been talking about, kids are trying to raise their voices. They're showing us by having these walkouts and strikes that they want to be heard.
Right.
And a passion of mine is helping them not only applaud them for doing that, but then pull them into other activities that are already going on and processes that they may not know about. So there's one coming up. We're going to have an information session on the Citizens Climate Lobby, which is an international organization. Mm-hmm. But we're having an info session at the Chapel Hill Library on April 28th from 12 to 2. Mm-hmm. And it's free to the public. And I'm encouraging high schoolers to come, and middle schoolers and their parents who, if they're interested in how government works. This group is working. There's already been a bill passed on the floor of the House in Congress. Mm-hmm. The bill is focused on climate solutions. And the particular bill says that we're going to put a price on carbon, but we're going to give that money back via a dividend to the people. So conservatives and liberals alike are into this sort of solution, right?
Yeah.
So there's this growing support for it, and I think just trying to create awareness about it. And then what I think the students would have a lot of fun with, besides the regular activities of writing letters or calling their congressperson, is June 9th through 11th in D.C. is a conference and lobby day where they'll train you how you participate in lobbying a congressman, and you actually go and do it. So
right.
My daughter and husband did it last year. They loved it, and they will be back again this year. So we're going to be talking to as many kids and adults as would like to learn about that and advocate on climate solutions.
Yeah, and talk about what you told me about joining in the model of Noah's Ark.
Oh,
I love
right.
that.
So
love that
the Citizens Climate Lobby has, I believe, been involved with creating this Climate Solutions Caucus in Congress, or I believe it's in the House.
Yeah.
There's so many House members and trying to create a whole caucus on climate solutions. And they designed it in a way that you can only join the caucus two by two, Noah's Ark style, they say.
Right.
So I think it's been going on for several years, and there are don't quote me, but I think there are like 90 or 100
right.
members now of this caucus. So it's
several
growing.
dozen members.
And
yeah.
no surprise, you've got congresspeople from Florida jumping in first
right.
because they're, you know, getting impacted
yeah.
more than other states.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a growing number of saying, you know, we've got to do something about this.
Right. And by doing it this way, it helps keep the issue right down the middle and keep it bipartisan. It almost keeps it nonpartisan, really. Because
right.
you know what? The water doesn't care what party you're in.
Exactly.
I've never, ever understood why Marco Rubio, for example, wasn't a little bit more on the ball about this because,
right.
I mean, this is your state. This is your
yeah.
state. If you go to Miami right now and you're there during a full moon, there's flooding
yeah.
just because of the cycle of the moon.
They have daytime,
the
regular daytime flooding in the streets. You see
yeah,
pictures of
no
people
storm.
Riding bikes
yes.
down
right.
the sidewalk in
right.
water. It's
and
crazy.
It's lapping up past your ankles, and it just... To ignore that to the degree that they have, I'm probably just going right down a rabbit hole here, but I really think that some of that is because of our concerns about having the real estate market just bottom out, that there'll be all these properties that can't be resold because that people want to get out and they can't sell the properties because
right.
of this flooding issue. But they're certainly must be doing things to try to mitigate and manage that storm, to manage storm water on
right.
top of just the regular, you know, it's a full moon, so Main
yeah.
Street is flooded. I mean, it's just, it's breathtaking to
I
me.
I mean, you just want to applaud folks in local government because they're going to have to.
They're just trying to manage it.
And they're going to try to have to, there are all these solutions. We have clean energy solutions. But what we don't have is all the money to pay for those. So
yeah.
we're going to have to be creative with how we solve these things. And I mean,
and we have these things here. I mean, we've talked about this many times on the show with Penny and with others about managing stormwater in Chapel Hill and that, you know, Eastgate and right where we're sitting right now, University Place is very vulnerable. And there's going to be more and more stormwater that's going to be presenting itself in ways that will not be denied.
Right.
And so we have to have other ways of doing management of this that are
right.
going, some of which are probably going to be pretty dramatic.
Well, and helping folks, I have a good friend who works for the EPA who says climate change is not a silver bullet. It's a silver buckshot is what we need. You know, there's
yeah,
all these different
right,
things we have
going
to work
in
on.
Many directions.
So getting
right.
folks to realize that the top contributor to emissions causing climate change is transportation. And how that, you know, you want to talk about stormwater, which is how we're going to mitigate all this solution. But in the meantime, we all do have about 10 to 12 years to sharply curb some things that we can be doing.
So are you saying that maybe we should invest in, I don't know, light rail or something like that?
I mean, I'd be fine with that. I see that that's a hot button issue
yeah,
that
I guess
I'm
so.
Not sure whether it's going to happen or not. But I just think, gosh, we've got to just stop fighting about these
just,
things.
I mean, yeah, we've just got to find a way.
Solve that.
I can tell you that my husband's generation versus my son is absolutely fascinating
mm-hmm.
to see. They have very different ideas about what it means to own a car.
Right.
This is like in my husband's DNA, and my son was like,
yeah.
"Well, unfortunately, I have to own a car."
right.
And that's a really good thing because it means that when systems come along where he can hop on a bus
yeah.
and ride into Chapel Hill to go see a movie and then ride home on the bus and never get in his car.
Right.
he'll do it.
Right.
And that's, I mean,
it's no big deal to them. So it's convincing voters that
there's not much sense of personal identity in what car he owns, except that he wants it to be as environmentally friendly as possible.
Yes.
But other than that, his self-esteem is not tied up in how zoom zoom his car is.
Right.
So I'd like to think that was from my side of the family. My husband probably won't hear that. So just make sure that I throw myself over the radio right as this part
of the
show comes on. Right. Yeah. Well, listen, Mary, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to mention to folks that Mary's book is available at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. Go over there. You can probably get a signed copy there and many other fascinating, awesome things at Flyleaf Books about, you know, supporting your sense of political activism. And we definitely want you to support Flyleaf. If for some reason that I cannot imagine you can't get a copy at Flyleaf, it's also available at through Flyleaf's website and also through, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and these guys. But, support your independent booksellers and your independent authors like Mary Perry. I thank you very, very much for joining us today. And now I'm going to twist Mary's arm and she's going to sign my copy of her book.
Happy to.
For my grandson. And thanks a lot for joining us on Weekend Water Cooler. Great. Everybody have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.